Okay, we'd like to get started. We'd like to welcome you up to the RAC meeting for the Southern Utah region. My name's Dave Black. I'm the chairman from St. George, represent the public at large. I'd like to go ahead and introduce the other RAC members, if we could, starting on my far right with Rusty.
Thanks, Dave. Rusty Aiken, Cedar City, at large.
Sean Kelly, Fillmore, representing Fish Lake and Disky National Forest.
Gene Boardman Hinckley, at large.
Nick Jorgensen from St. George, representing non-consumptive.
Kevin Bunnell, regional supervisor for the southern region.
Braden Richmond, Beaver sportsman.
Brian Johnson, Enoch, Utah, non-consumptive.
Craig Lobb, Iron County, agriculture.
Okay, thank you. We'd also like to recommend two of our wildlife board members here that tonight we have Donnie Hunter and Steve Dalton. Appreciate your attendance. I assume everybody received a copy of the minutes from our last meeting. Okay, we want to make sure that those get out. And on the agenda, from the way it was issued originally, we moved one of the items up. It's now item number 5, which is the update for Kolob Reservoir. And so with that, I will entertain a motion to accept and approve the agenda in the minutes. Braden?
I'll make a motion to accept the change and the minutes.
Do we have a second? Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor? Okay. Thank you. So we'll move right in then to item number 3, which will be a wildlife board meeting update. And if you remember last time, we were looking at the fur bearer rule and also the cougar recommendations. So at the wildlife board meeting, let me just go through real quick. There was a motion to accept the fur bearer rule amendments as presented, with an amendment to the motion to include an annual control board meeting workshop group that they reconvene in a year to review the effects of the changes recommended by the DWR, and that passed as presented. If you recall, we had made some recommendations at the Southern RAC to maybe change the requirements of the 600 foot to extend out to the property line. There was quite a bit of discussion on that, but it didn't make it into the motion, so that stands the way it was presented. Also, there was a motion that the division research the possibility of a multi-year fur bearer license and report back to the board in June of 2019. So that was fairly positive, and I think that that's probably something that will likely happen in the future, but they'll come before the RAC as well next year. On the bobcat harvest, the recommendation was to accept as presented, which passed unanimous. And then we get to the cougar recommendations, and they broke that up into several items, which they addressed separately. The first item was is that they made a motion that the Book Cliffs unit switch to a split season rather than a harvest objective and maintain the 29 permits, and that passed unanimous. Then they looked at requiring GPS data in the check-in process, and what they recommended was that the division present a recommendation next year on the inclusion of the GPS checking data, which would require the location, time of kill, photograph of the sex, and the location of the site. Then they looked at splitting the Oker-Stansbury unit into two separate units, and the Stansbury would become a harvest objective unit. The Oker would become a limited entry, and that passed unanimous. Then they looked at creating a harvest objective subunit on the Mineral Mountains, which is one that we'd recommended. And they divided up the permits, so there'd be three permits on the harvest objective, leaving the remaining 10 permits on the Beaver East unit. That passed unanimous. They looked at an increase of tags on the East Manti unit. Actually, it was only an increase of 2 rather than an increase of 4, which is recommended by the division. That passed 5-1. They looked at to keep the East Sion unit as a limited entry and maintain the permit number at 10, and that passed 4-2. And then the balance of the division's recommendations passed as presented, and that was unanimous. So I think that pretty much covers that. They talked about additional antlerless permits and additional permits on the bison unit on the Henry Mountains. And what the motion was is to change the last two new bison hunts from cow hunts to hunter's choice, and that passed 5-1. So I think that covered most of the main stuff at the Wildlife Board. Any questions on that? Okay. We'll move to item number 4, which will be a regional update from Kevin.
Thank you, Dave. I'd like to update you on a few things. First, most of you have heard that we have a potential pneumonia outbreak in our sheep population here in Zion. We've been trying to work with the park and tracking that closely. Our biologists flew the unit last week on Wednesday and Thursday, primarily to get ewe to lamb ratios. That's one of the first things that will be impacted when if you have a pneumonia outbreak. Currently, our ewe to lamb ratios are still good. We'll fly that unit again in November to see if they remain that way. That's the first place that if the outbreak starts impacting the population, that's where we'll see it first, is in our ewe to lamb ratio. So we thought it was important to kind of get a baseline now, and we will, as I said, fly that again in November. We do have some evidence now of pneumonia outside of the park, which we hadn't seen up until about a week ago. So we're keeping our fingers crossed with that population, but it's certainly possible that we will have significant impacts on the Zion sheep population because of disease. Teresa also asked me to mention that this year we will be collecting CWD samples on the Fillmore and the Beaver units. So as you guys are out and about and talking to people, particularly anybody that has permits on those units, please encourage them, if they harvest a deer, to make sure that we're able to collect a CWD sample. It's hard to get the number of samples that we need to have it be meaningful. And then just a little bit more about what the Wildlife Board did. So the division recommended an additional, I think it was 753 cow elk tags in response to some drought conditions that were experienced around the state that the Wildlife Board passed at the last meeting. In addition to that, there was 109 bison permits, which essentially doubled the number of bison permits on the Henry Mountain. I was on the Henry Mountain myself this summer. It's in very, very poor shape. And so that was a response. That was the right thing to do from a habitat preservation standpoint. But the other thing I want you to understand is last Thursday morning when we put those cow tags on sale, if first of all, our online sales system wasn't functioning very well. And even with that not functioning very well, those permits were gone in 15 minutes. When I arrived at our office at 7 a.m., there were people already waiting, and by 8 o'clock when we opened the door, there was a line out around the building. In excess of 35,000 people were trying to log on to our website for 753 cow elk permits. So I think that's worth keeping in mind. You know, and we will be dealing with big game permits again, and there'll be some proposals that will be to try to increase opportunity, and there'll be some opposition to that. But there is a lot of demand for just opportunity for people to go hunt, and I think that's worth keeping in mind. There's valid arguments on the other side as well, but that's pretty telling. 35,000 people trying to get 753 cow elk permits, and it's done in. If the website would have been functioning properly, they probably would have been done in less than 5 minutes. It was just because the site wasn't working very well that it lasted 15. So, our habitat section, really the only thing Gary wanted me to update you on is the Brian Head Fire area is recovering. A few of the roads are beginning to be reopened by the Forest Service. We were, you know, early in the year up until about the 1st of July, it was a little iffy on what was going on up there. The monsoon moisture that we got through July and the first half of August really had a very positive impact on that fire scar. Law enforcement, the archery hunt seems to be pretty standard from a law enforcement standpoint. You know, they are finding a few violations, but nothing out of the ordinary. From our outreach section, I don't know if any of you got to or saw the fish planting video that we posted on our Facebook page. When was that, Phil? About 2 weeks ago now, 10 days ago. That video has been viewed more than 15 million times. And it's been viewed all over the world. We've had calls from several countries in Europe and lots of other places, including all of the national news outlets have mentioned that. So, and I'll mention that was Phil, our outreach manager, that put that video together, and it's been interesting to watch that kind of snowball. We're also working. Got a lot of people working up at the fair right now. If you're up at the state fair up in Salt Lake, make sure you stop by our building. It's been significantly upgraded over the last year, and the displays are. I haven't been up there yet. I'll be up there Saturday, but I've been told that everything looks really good this year. I'll skip over aquatics. We have Richard coming up next on our agenda, so I'll let him give you the aquatics update. Before I end, let me just talk about procedures a little bit with the RAC. We need to make sure we had a little bit of a miss. Our minutes weren't quite right. Our motions weren't quite right at the board meeting last time. So I'm going to slow everybody down. Make sure before we move on that the motions that we know exactly what's there and that everything's correct before we move on to the next item. So if you'd give me a minute to make sure that we're ready before we move on, I'd appreciate it. So with that, if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Kevin, for the novice, would you explain how it is you identify sheep that have this disease?
Very much like you do humans that have pneumonia, they cough. And they'll have discharge coming out of their mouth and their nose.
Okay.
And then they die. Yeah. So. Anyway, good question. Yeah, go ahead.
Got a question on this sheep there. We had some discussion on the way down, actually. But if we see that pneumonia spreading, is the division looking at opportunities to allow harvesting sheep there?
It's interesting you bring that up. I was on a phone call with Teresa and our coordinators in Salt Lake with that exact subject, on that exact topic. At what point, if we think we're going to be losing sheep, do we put out a few more rams permits and things so that we can let hunters harvest those animals? That's something that's being considered, and we'll kind of watch things closely. Certainly a possibility, though. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. We'll move to item number 5 then, which is an update on Kolob Reservoir, and that'll be Richard Hepworth.
All right. Thank you. Before I jump into Kolob, and I'll keep it short, just a couple other things to update you on in aquatics. First, if you get the chance, go up by Fish Lake and see the kokanee. I think this is probably going to be one of the best years we ever see up there. It's already impressive what's showing up, and it'll probably peak around the first part of October is when those will peak. So if you get the chance, it's worth going and looking at it. It's pretty impressive. The other thing is, we've had an extremely dry year. I think we've been pretty lucky so far. Most of our reservoirs are holding up quite well. Minersville's looking good. Panguitch is looking good. The fishing's going to be good this fall in some places, even though we've had low water. With that, let me jump into Kolob, and then I'll be happy to take any questions. To start with, I just wanted to mention, back in 2009, and we came around to the RACs and the Wildlife Board with this, we worked with a group of anglers, some of the cabin owners, water users at Kolob Reservoir, put together a management plan. The main goal of this management plan was to provide the anglers of Utah quality fishing experience up there. And then they had a bunch of goals and objectives tied to that. Couple of the main ones that this group was concerned with was to maintain and preserve the natural self-sustaining fishery we had up there. So Kolob was pretty unique in Utah. We had 4 different subspecies of cutthroat in there. We had Yellowstone, Bonneville, Colorado, and Bear Lake cutthroat that had all been stocked in there at different times, that were reproducing on their own, inbreeding, including rainbow with that, created a pretty unique fishery up there that we had very little stocking we ever had to do, and it sustained a lot of fishermen. So they wanted to make sure and maintain that. The second part was we had an illegal introduction of these golden shiners. It happened way back in the 80s. They tried once to get rid of them, weren't able to. But with the plan we put in place up there, we were able to keep those to very minimal. We hardly ever see them up there. There are a few holding around. But things like maintaining 5% of the fish at over 20 inches was one of the things that helped that. But just wanted to mention we had that in place. We've been operating under this management plan since 2009. It's been very successful, really good fishery up there until this year. This spring, mentioned the golden shiners. This spring when we did our annual gill netting up there, we found bluegill and green sunfish in our net. Both of those fish disappointed us and worried us. But at that time we decided, you know what, let's watch. Let's see how they impact the trout fishery up there before we make any big decisions to move forward with something else. And then about a month ago, we started to get a couple phone calls. In fact, it was over one weekend, the weekend before Labor Day, I got 3 calls from different people that said we caught yellow perch. The first 2, I said, do you got a picture? Both of them said, no, we didn't take any pictures, and I kept hoping it was going to be a green sunfish. And then the 3rd person said, yeah, I got some pictures, sent them to me, and sure enough, it was yellow perch. So we really thought about what to do. We ran up there. We did some gill netting. We did that last week, set 2 gill nets in the lake, and we filled the gill nets up with perch. We actually caught more perch than we did trout in there. The trout we caught really looked like they were in bad shape. They were already losing weight. So the first thing is just talk about what are the consequences of these perch, and really what's going to happen is they're going to overpopulate. In fact, they already have, which is little troubling that we didn't pick them up before now, to be honest. I think they were probably introduced back in 2015 or even 16 at the latest. But they're going to overpopulate that lake and cause those trout to just quit growing. That's the first thing that's going to happen. They're going to get all the food before the trout do. The next thing they're going to do is all those little fish that come out of the creek when all those cutthroat and rainbows run up to spawn, they're going to eat those up too. So we're going to lose our reproduction and we're going to lose our growth. Problematic. So we contacted Washington County Water Conservancy District. They own the water up there. They own the dam. They own pretty much all the land around it as well. And talked to them about, hey, so we got this legal introduction. It's a problem. What are your plans with the water? And they had some discussions and talked about it and said, you know what? We needed to drain the lake anyway. We've got problems with the outlet that we had to find a way to fix. We were either going to try and do it with divers, or worst case, we were going to drain the lake to do it. And they said, but you got this problem too. Let's deal with both of them at the same time. The lake's already really low because of the drought conditions we're in. We'll drain the thing down as far as we possibly can. Then you can come in and kill what's ever left. So right now, that's kind of the plan. They started draining last week. We're hoping about November 1st. I told them if we get past the 15th of November, we're probably getting too late in the year. Ice, snow, things like that could cause problems. So we're shooting for November 1st to have the lake drained and poison it. So by treating it this fall, we do a number of things. We try and remove that incentive and do not allow those who move the fish to benefit from it. They're just to the point now people can start catching them. So if we can get them out of there before people get to benefit, we think that's a positive. We get the dam repairs done. If that wasn't the case, if we'd poison it now and not drain it down, you know, they'd be draining it probably in a couple years anyway. With them draining it really increases our success, our likelihood of killing all these fish that we don't want in there, and it increases decreases the chances of them showing up in some other places. So it's real positive to get this done. It's a shame, and we hate to have to do it, but really it's the best option we've got right now to deal with them. Along with that, there's a lot of information here. I don't think I'm going to go into everything on this slide, but put together a pretty comprehensive stocking or restocking plan for the lake. So first thing next spring, and it's all contingent on getting some snow this winter and having some water in there, but as long as we've got some water in there, the one thing that I do want to say with this is we've got some really good options to get all of those species back in the lake except for Yellowstone cutthroat. That's the one species we just don't have available in Utah anymore to put in there. But we got rainbows going in. We're going to actually transfer some live fish from Manning Meadow Reservoir, which is our brood source for Bonneville cutthroat. Those will be in the neighborhood of 14 to 18 inches when we move them in there, and then hopefully they'll run up and spawn immediately. We're going to throw a few tiger trout in there. We had some brookies in there, but I'm not going to be able to get brookies for a couple of years, so I thought let's try some tigers to start with. But anyway, we got a pretty comprehensive stocking plan to get that lake up and going. What does that mean? 2019, I can say the fishing will be okay. We're going to have really rapid growth. Whenever we do this at a lake, we've done it at Paiute, Otter Creek, Minersville, we've done it a lot of places. We see some of the fastest growth on fish you ever see following a treatment. By fall next year, those 7-inch rainbows we're going to stock, they'll be over 14 inches. By 2020, we'll have some of those up over 20 inches. Cutthroat, like I said, we're going to stock some nearly 18 inches that first year, so there'll be some like that. By 2020, I think you're going to start to see the lake almost as good as it was before these perch showed up. And that's kind of what I had on Kolob, but I'd be happy to take any questions on it or anything else.
I have a question, Richard. You had mentioned before that there may be some type of reward offered or anything like that.
We put out an option that if somebody knew anything about who brought any of these fish into Kolob, and with to help with some of Southern Utah anglers and others, we got up to a $3,000 that we could have offered for a reward. So far, we haven't heard anything.
Still hoping.
Okay. If you know anything, you might get a new rod out of the deal or something.
There you go. Any questions?
Yeah, I've got a question. So were the bluegill and sunfish also illegally introduced?
Yes, none of those were stocked by us. There was also, and I failed to mention it during the presentation, when we did the netting, we also found mountain suckers in there. So we found four species this year that we didn't know were in there that somebody moved on us. Bluegill and green sunfish could have come from as close as down here in Washington County. They're in all the ponds, Quail Creek, Sand Hollow. Yellow perch, closest place they could have come from that I know of is Fish Lake. Yeah, it had to come from there. The mountain sucker, we have them in the Beaver and Sevier River systems is where that would have had to come from.
So they use them for bait to try to catch the bigger fish and then they get
the mountain suckers, most likely that was what they were brought in for, was bait. The perch was more for somebody wanted perch there.
So is it, remind me of the regulations on the co-op, is it open to bait?
It is during the summer months, when school's out. So from about Memorial Day to Labor Day, it's open to bait fishing. It's still got a slot limit on it and a reduced creel limit on there. But that we've removed all that right now to let people harvest fish prior to the treatment.
What would your backup plan be if we have another winter like last winter up there?
Hold fish until we can get water. I will say I'm working with the water district down here in Washington County. They're going to do everything they can to hold as much water in there and get it as full as they can with what resources they have. The water we're draining out now, they're going to be able to recapture that in Sand Hollow and Quail Creek so it doesn't basically just get wasted.
Anybody else? Come up to the mic, Randy, and state your name. Just we want to make sure we get it in the minutes. Mike's over here.
Hi, I'm Randy Kronk. I'm president of Southern Utah Anglers. Just have a question for you. Would you consider going back on Kolob Reservoir, going back to artificial flying lure as we had it before this all happened?
Well, you know, the regulation that we had in place was part of that management plan process, and it was working very well. It was allowing a very diverse group of anglers to fish up at the lake, and it was still producing trophy fish. So from a regulation standpoint, I think we had the right thing in place. If after we drain it, restock it, we see issues with too much harvest up there or reduced growth for some reason, then I'd revisit it. But prior to that regulation, we were having a problem with too many fish in the lake and low growth rates and not seeing those big fish. By allowing that harvest during the summer by the bait anglers, we saw bigger fish.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else? Thank you. That was very helpful. Are you going to take that same information to the board meeting or to any other racks? Or
we just brought it here for the first time. I think I'm open to going up to the board meeting with it. But
I've made the director's office aware that it's an option if they would like to have it at the board meeting. So if you guys feel like you'd like to see it there, then some direction that way may be helpful.
Okay. Well, that might be something we could think about. You know, like if we're getting people from other parts, you know, central region or other regions, it's more probably more than just a Southern Utah issue, but it's something to think about. Okay. With that, then we'll move into our first action item. This is going to be on the fishing guidebook rule. Before we start, I just want to make sure that if there's any of you in the audience that want to make a comment, we do have comment cards. Please give those cards to the officer in the back, and he'll bring those up.
And then there will be a part where you can come up and make your comments, and that'll be coming up shortly. If you do, if there's anybody in the audience that has any questions following the presentation, there will be a time where you can ask questions, but that's not the comment time. And if you do that, when we announce that, you can come to the mic and state your name as well, and we'll get those questions documented and answered. So we'll move on then with the fishing guidebook rule.
Good evening. My name is Craig Walker. I am the Sport Fish Assistant Chief in our Aquatics Section with the Division of Wildlife Resources. Tonight, I'd like to present to you the results from our fishing regulation survey and our suggested regulation changes for the 2019-2020 fishing guidebook. Before we get into the survey results and the regulation changes that we're suggesting be put forward, I'd like to go over a little bit about what we are trying to do when we put forward regulations. The objectives of regulations when we put them into place are to maximize angler satisfaction primarily, increase angler use of Utah's fisheries, enhance trophy opportunities where possible, modify harvest where desirable, and in many instances simplify regulations when necessary and beneficial, and sometimes maintain consistency between management actions and conservation needs. So as I go through with some of the suggested regulation changes this evening, I'm going to try to tack those back into some of these objectives so that you can get a rationale behind why we're suggesting some of these regulation changes, if that makes sense. Jumping right into the fishing regulation survey from 2018, as in other years, the Division of Wildlife Resources conducted an online survey to gather angler input on proposed regulation changes for the 2019-2020 cycle. The survey ran from May 18 to June 15, 2018, and we received 4,718 responses. That's a 27% response rate. For any survey these days, that's pretty darn good. Not only was data collected on people's responses related to the suggested regulation changes, but we also gathered information on their behaviors, preferences, and county of residence, which in some instances allows us to dive a little deeper into where, into who is actually wanting those regulation changes and where they might live and what their preferences are in relation to those regulation changes. Should be noted that fewer than 30% of respondents opposed any of the regulation changes we proposed this year. However, in two instances, we did see some localized opposition that was different from that 30% opposition. It was actually greater in those two instances. Sorry. And go ahead.
That's an important difference on the slide in what you said. It says opposed all proposed, but you just said proposed any of the proposed. That's really different.
30% for each of them. There was no greater than 30% opposition for any of, which could be construed as all of the regulations that we put forward. Okay. Not as a lump sum, but as individual answer choices. Does that make sense?
I believe what you're saying makes sense. That bullet, at least to me, that bullet does not align with what you're saying.
Okay. So for clarification's sake, we proposed several regulations. For each one of the individual regulations proposed, we received no greater than 30% opposition. Per individual regulation.
That's good clarification.
Okay. Thank you for pointing that out. We did see some difference in our localized opposition on two of those suggested regulation changes, and I'll point that out when we get into the regulation portion of the survey. So we'll start off with general regulation changes proposed this year. Some of you may remember back in 2016, we conducted a survey, and anglers were asked if they would support the use of corn as bait. At that time, 70% of our respondents supported the use of corn. For that reason, in 2017-2018, we decided to pilot the use of corn at 8 lakes in the state of Utah. The way we were going to track any potential impacts, which was a concern at the time of the legalization of corn as bait at those 8 waters, was to track littering violations at those 8 waters and statewide. During the 2018 survey, anglers were asked if they witnessed any negative impacts at the 8 pilot waters as a result of corn use legalization. Of the 1,636 anglers who fished at one or more of those 8 waters, only 3% witnessed a negative impact. We conferred with our Division of Wildlife Resources law enforcement personnel regarding littering violations at Utah waters in general. We did not see an uptick of littering violations during the 2017-2018 timeframe when corn became legalized at those 8 waters. Anecdotally, the Division of Wildlife Resources personnel did not see an impact at any of the 8 waters either. So at this point in time, we are recommending statewide legalization of corn as bait starting in 2019 based upon those results. The second general regulation change that we are proposing is the elimination of the Lake Powell Reciprocal Fishing Permit. During the 2018 survey, anglers were asked if they would support this elimination of the reciprocal permit for Arizona residents to fish at the Utah portion of Lake Powell. They were in support of that. The Division of Wildlife Resources also feels that the removal of the reciprocal permit requirement will actually increase use of angling at Lake Powell. We recommend, therefore, the elimination of Lake Powell reciprocal permit starting during the 2019 cycle. A third general regulation change that's being proposed is not one that was included in a survey. This is actually an effort to address a law enforcement concern that was proposed or presented to us by our law enforcement personnel, having to deal with the enforcement of live fathead minnow sales in the pet trade. Right now, the DWR is recommending that all color variants of fathead minnows be identified as bait species to allow for a drawing of balance between management actions and conservation needs. Basically, right now, we have a situation where rosy red minnows can be sold as ornamental fish. Rosy red minnow is just a different name for fathead minnows. So by rule right now, fathead minnows are bait. Fathead minnows cannot be sold as ornamental fish. But rosy red minnows are not recognized as fathead minnows. So this is a clarification portion of the rule change where rosy red minnows will be recognized as fathead minnows and therefore will not be allowed to be sold as ornamental fish in the state of Utah. By not allowing their sale in the state of Utah, the likelihood of their escapement and impact to native fish is lessened. Therefore, we're protecting our native species. This was an odd one for me as we went through the guidebook. This is another one that did not go through any sort of survey process, but it did need to be, in our minds, removed from the guidebook. Currently, for an angler under the age of 12 to set line fish, they have to have a fishing or combination license. We don't offer a fishing or combination license to anglers under the age of 12. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to have that on the books. So right now we're recommending the removal of the set line rule requirement for those under the age of 12 so that we promote ease of use for everybody in Utah. Moving on to the special regulation changes, we'll go into one statewide special regulation change. The Division of Wildlife Resources is wanting to move forward with the introduction of some tiger muskellunge at our community waters in some instances in an effort to encourage people to not only fish for tiger muskie, but experience, be exposed to a very charismatic, one of the few charismatic trophy fish that we have in the state, and hopefully encourage their participation in angling for the long term. We do, however, recognize the fact that by stocking tiger muskie in community waters, we're going to have a very scarce resource. You can't stock tiger muskie in high densities, and these are small water bodies. So you're going to have very few tiger muskie available to be caught. Under the current rule, regardless of species, two fish may be harvested at community waters. We recognize the fact that if two fish, two tiger muskie are harvested, they are not going to persist in that system, and we will not achieve our objective of promoting angler participation using this large trophy species. So, right now, we are recommending the establishment of a catch-and-release regulation for tiger muskie at community fishing ponds. We will, however, maintain the two fish regulation for all other species at community waters. You guys can't hear me, right? And in the future, as we move forward with stocking of tiger muskie at community waters, we will be establishing special regs for each of those community waters where those tiger muskie are introduced. Getting into the regional special regulation changes in the northeastern region, we are proposing that we have a Flaming Gorge Reservoir two-day possession limit and liberalized lake trout limit. Flaming Gorge is one of two waters that remains that does not have a two-day possession limit in the state of Utah. Based upon our survey results, only 17% of respondents were opposed to a two-day possession limit that would allow for eight trout or kokanee salmon to be in possession. No more of those would be six kokanee salmon. 24 lake trout in possession with two exceeding 28 inches, 12 catfish, and 20 smallmouth and largemouth bass, or black bass, as we sometimes call them. Among those respondents who actually fished at Flaming Gorge, only 20% opposed this regulation. A little additional information, background on this. Right now, Wyoming has already moved to a 24-fish lake trout possession limit. This would allow us to dovetail with that Wyoming limit. Additionally, DWR and Wyoming Game and Fish would like to encourage the harvest of lake trout, and we're trying to work in concert to do that, to minimize their impact on the kokanee population in Flaming Gorge. DWR right now has observed no biological effect of a two-day possession limit at any other water in Utah. As I mentioned, there's only two that don't have that two-day possession limit, and that's been going on now for 4 years. And in our mind, in order to simplify regulations and increase angler harvest of lake trout, DWR is now recommending a two-day possession at Flaming Gorge Reservoir with a one-day limit of 12 lake trout with one over 28 inches. So that is, when it's a two-day possession limit, two over 28 inches. Moving on to the central region. Similarly to Flaming Gorge Reservoir, Strawberry Reservoir, we're recommending that a two-day possession limit be established there. We asked respondents if they would be supportive of that two-day possession limit at Strawberry Reservoir. Only 13% of respondents opposed the two-day possession limit with eight trout or kokanee salmon in possession. No more of four of those fish may be cutthroat trout under 15 inches, and no more than two of those cuts may be over 22 inches. Among those respondents who fished at Strawberry Reservoir, still only 17% opposed this regulation as described there. Right now, therefore, DWR is recommending a two-day possession at Strawberry Reservoir in the interest of simplifying regulations and making two-day possession legal across the state. Moving on to the southeast region, we asked folks if they would support the removal of the Pete's Hole Reservoir tributary closure. They were indeed in support of that. The seasonal protection of cutthroat trout on that tributary is no longer a conservation priority for that water. We've actually moved on with other conservation actions for Colorado River cutthroat trout in that drainage. This isn't anything we're concerned with, and right now we'd like to open it up for general statewide regs. So DWR recommends removal of the Pete's Hole tributary closure to increase the use of that fishery. At Recapture Reservoir, we asked anglers if they would support a liberalized northern pike limit with a minimum size restriction, and they indeed were supportive of that. So right now we are recommending the establishment of a 20 northern pike limit with one over 36 inches at Recapture, and this is in order to establish a trophy opportunity at that water and increase the average size of the population. heading into the northern region. We asked anglers if they would be supportive of a change in the catfish regulation at Cutler Reservoir. Currently, Cutler Reservoir affords anglers the 8-fish statewide limit. However, there has been interest in the region of establishing a trophy catfish fishery. The first step in establishing a trophy catfish fishery is getting a more robust population out there. To get that robust population, we recommend establishing a 4-channel catfish limit at Cutler Reservoir and its tributaries. And that is the first step, as I mentioned, in getting us that trophy channel catfish opportunity. DWR will be monitoring the response of the channel catfish population at this water, and we're going to be using that data to inform our management decisions through our management team, and then actually inform our management decisions statewide as to what we're going to be doing with channel catfish. Heading into the southern region, we asked anglers if they would support a catch-and-kill regulation on East Fork of Boulder Creek. Only 19% of respondents were opposed to the establishment of a catch-and-kill brook trout regulation on East Fork of Boulder Creek. However, within Garfield County, 78% of respondents were opposed to this regulation. The idea here is for us to encourage the removal of brook trout from East Fork Boulder Creek as part of a cutthroat trout conservation effort. But with that much disparity between the statewide responses and then the localized responses, we recognize that we have to do something different than a catch and kill on this. But we still have to balance that with the need to have our cutthroat trout conservation efforts move forward. So what we're recommending is the establishment of a no-limit regulation for brook trout on East Fork of Boulder Creek. And just it's a subtlety, but the difference between a no limit and a catch and kill is that a no limit gives anglers the choice to harvest as few or as many brook trout as they would like, whereas a catch and kill forces people to keep that fish once it's caught for brook trout. So we believe that the no limit is a good compromise in this instance. We asked anglers if they would support a Navajo Lake minimum lake length limit, and they were indeed supportive of that. So right now, the Division of Wildlife Resources is recommending the establishment of a minimum length limit of one trout over 22 inches to prevent overharvest, specifically for splake, which seasonally are actually impacted by harvest more than we would like on those larger fish. Third special regulation change in the southern region is the removal of the East Fork severe gear restrictions and conservative limit. Only 16% of respondents opposed the elimination of the fly and lure restriction and increase of the limit to 4 trout on East Fork Sevier River. Among the respondents who actually fished the East Fork of the Sevier River, however, 51% were opposed to the regulation change. Again, a marked difference between who actually uses the resource and who might use the resource. Even though there is that marked difference, we're still recommending the elimination of the fly and lure restriction and increasing the trout limit to 4 fish on the East Fork of the Sevier River to increase the use of the resource by all anglers and thin the population a little bit, get a better population health profile out there. The Division of Wildlife Resources, as I mentioned, identifies the fact that there is a difference in opinion between existing users and potential users, and we will revisit the regulation in the event that conflicts arise between these two different groups. Another suggested special reg change in the southern region is the elimination of the special regulations on Mammoth Creek. Anglers were in support of this. Additionally, the area covered under special regulations is no longer available for public access. So the Division of Wildlife Resources right now recommends the elimination of special regs on Mammoth Creek in the interest, again, of simplifying regulations. Southern region's getting rid of a lot of, or suggesting that they get rid of a lot of special regulations this year. They recommended the elimination of special regs on UM Creek as well. Historically, not only at UM Creek, but in other places throughout the state, there were concerns about the impact of whirling disease on the landscape, and we were very conservative as to how we treated populations. We didn't want additive mortality with harvest compounding what might occur as a result of whirling disease impacting these fish populations. However, to date at UM Creek, we haven't seen any impact from whirling disease, and the need to actually have those conservation concerns addressed through a reduced harvest are not there. So right now, DWR recommends eliminating the special regs on UM Creek in the interest of simplifying regulations. And then the final regulation change for the southern region that's been suggested is the elimination of the special regulation at Red Creek Reservoir. The Division of Wildlife Resources recommends reducing the limit at Paragona Reservoir to 4 trout, allowing the fish population that was impacted by the Bryan Head fire to rebound. This has been an 8 trout limit for a long time. It was a very robust population that could afford a lot of harvest. Right now, again, as a result of the fire impacts, we believe that we need to let it rest a little bit. So we've suggested the reduction of that trout limit from 8 trout to 4 trout. This was also supported by the public. So just as I leave you here tonight, I want to remind you to spread the word. Please have anybody and everybody share their ideas with us during our annual survey on June 15th of every year. And be sure to share your ideas with regional managers. Do what we're doing here tonight. Share your ideas at RAC meetings. Email your ideas to dwrcomment@utah.gov, or you can mail your ideas to us directly in Salt Lake at Sport Fisheries Program Coordinator, Division of Wildlife Resources, P.O. Box 146301. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions from the RAC? Rusty?
So the correspondence on your survey, is that statewide anglers? Pretty much?
Yes.
It's not regional. It's not like a specific water. You survey the people in that area, so you have people from northern Utah.
Correct. So what we try to do is we look at our overall license sales, and we look at combination licenses, fishing licenses, female anglers, male anglers, and then we proportionally kind of take subsamples out of our pool of emails, and then we try to get a representative sample from all those individual groups.
Any idea what percentage of fly fishermen and lure fishermen, artificial fishermen, I guess, compared to bait fishermen? Is it 50-50, 80-20?
I'm going to say that. And this isn't coming out of this regulation survey. This is coming out of our statewide angler survey. Mm-hmm. I believe that we are in the realm of 60-40 bait to fly and lure anglers, okay, if I remember correctly.
Any idea how many artificial streams in southern region, if you remove these three that are left?
No. I don't know that off the top of my head. Richard might have a better answer to that. None? None, he says, none. And just as an FYI, SFW, of course, is going to come up here, and they're going to explain that they're not in agreement with us on the removal of those special regs. And we respect that, and we recognize their point of view on that for sure. I've talked with SFW and the Utah Angler Coalition, and what the game plan is moving forward, regardless of how this pans out this year as far as the removal of these special regs, is to make sure that we are allotting the resource proportionally to what people want out there. If 60% of our anglers in a certain region of Utah want to fish with bait, then 60% of our resources have to afford bait angling for those folks. Otherwise, we're going to lose them as anglers.
Right.
And that's right. Working with them to kind of carve up the landscape, if you will. It's kind of a crude term, but you know, partition things equitably among our angling public is probably what we're going to be doing here in the next 2 years across the board.
Well, I'm an artificial fly guy, and I love fly fishing, and I appreciate Richard. He's done a fantastic job in our fisheries, but it really disappoints me that he's wanting to take these three small streams off artificial and quite a bit, especially when there's none left.
What is interesting, and I did dive into our survey results a little bit deeper, 90% of our bait anglers, their preference as far as a water type is a small creek. And it makes me think back to when I was a bait slinger and wasn't a fly angler.
All right.
Where did I go fishing? Other than sitting on a bucket on a shoreline at a reservoir, as far as streams went, I went to small streams and I worm dunked and caught whatever I could. And it's I learned how to fish, right? And we don't have a lot of those opportunities available in Utah right now. And I think that's what Richard's trying to set up, is an opportunity for those that may not have access to fishing because they're not specialized enough, fly anglers yet. They might get there someday, but they might not be there right now, and they need a place to go on a stream. And that's what he's looking for.
Well, I think there's miles and miles of stream that's all open to bait, but now there's none just specific. And I don't think you can say in any region in the state that we have that.
Now, one thing to keep in mind, Rusty, is there's not a single stream in the state of Utah that a fly fisherman can't fish. If we start going down this road of cutting these streams up because we're worried about the type of gear you're using, you're going to start seeing streams carved up into bait-only sections, and there will be places that fly anglers can't fish. So just a thought there to be careful. Right now, fly fishermen can fish everywhere. Bait fishermen are restricted in some areas, and, you know, that's what concerns me.
That's a stretch, Richard. I'm sorry, but that's a stretch. I fished almost every state in the West fly fishing, and
I wouldn't go that far. Reiterate the fact that we've got different anglers out there, and we need to make sure that we have different opportunities afforded to each one of those different groups.
Correct.
That's all.
Okay. So, I have a question.
You're taking it away.
And are there other states that have bait only areas that they fish? I've never heard of one. I've heard of fly fishing only or artificial lure only. I've never heard of a bait only section of stream. Do those exist anywhere?
Other than fisheries where you have close quarters and fly and lure angling probably isn't something you want to have going on because people are going to hook each other in the ear, no. I don't know of any.
Okay. Do we have any other questions from the rack? Okay. Do we have questions from the audience? This is not the comment section, but a specific question for clarification.
Another question?
Sure.
What do you think? On the Mammoth Creek, was the patches involved in this decision? On the Mammoth? They own, that's their private property.
I believe that is their ground, correct?
Right.
Yes.
They weren't involved since the decision.
Go ahead.
No, we did not talk to them prior to making the suggested regulation change. We have talked to them since, and they are here to provide some comment tonight.
Thank you. Okay, let's move into the comment section then. We'll start off with Ken Strong, followed by Randy Kronk.
Thank you, RAC members, for the opportunity to visit with you. I'm Ken Strong. I'm the fishing coordinator for Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. And as we have looked this situation over and talked to our members, what we would like to see is UM Creek. We would like to allow the cutthroat or fish with cutthroat markings to be harvested, but we would like to see it stay as a fly and artificial lure only. We don't want to see some of these streams disappear that are artificial and fly streams, and this would about wipe them out down in southern Utah. As far as the East Fork of the Sevier, we would allow the limit to be raised from 2 to 4 fish. But there are 3 miles of the whole river that are artificial flies and lures only, just 3 miles. We would like to see that 3 miles remain as flies and artificial lures. The rest is already allowed for bait, and we don't have a problem with that. One thing that if you noticed on their surveys is 51% of the people in this area recommended that it does not change. They didn't want it to change from flies to an artificial lures only. It's just this area.
The second part was for which creek? You said UN Creek, and then...
And then the East Fork of the Sevier. So with the survey saying that this area that they would like to see, 51% would like to have it remain as artificial flies and artificial lures only from this area, and it is in this area. We would like to recommend that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Okay, Randy will be followed by Reed Nelson.
What he said. Southern Utah Anglers has taken the same stand on this. The East Fork of the Sevier, Mammoth Creek, and Ump Creek are designation fisheries for us. We travel to those to fly fish. Not that we can't travel somewhere else, but they're designated for that. I'm confused on the fact of it is that we get involved in the fact of gear when artificial fly and lure only, your slot limits and everything else are for the fish. And I'm a little concerned about the fact that...
Randy, can I have you speak into the mic?
Oh, can you hear? Is that better? I'm a little concerned about the fact that when... We start, and now I find out that we're going to eliminate, we've just dropped the 3 streams that we have artificial fly and lure on, and now we have none. I don't think that bait fishermen are going to go up, obviously, on Mammoth Creek, but I fish that, and anyhow, it's great the way it is. It's been that way for 15 years, and it's worked. We have a really good fishery. We have really good fishing, and I don't think that taking the fly lure off because a bunch of guys want to go bait fish is really an answer. And the other thing is you're taking away. You're saying I'm going to help out these bait fishermen. Okay, we all bait fish. But then you're killing us as fly fishermen. I know all the guys in my club are fly fishermen, and those are destination places that we go fish for that specific reason. And to just open them up, I don't think it does your fishery any good due to the size of the creek and your environment and that sort of thing. I just think you should just leave them the way they are. It doesn't hurt anything. They've worked fine for these years. And to go ahead and remove that is, you know, you're going, well, okay, is it for the fish? And I understand the Fish and Game's plight, and the fact of it is that you're trying to appease everybody, use more of our waters for that, for fishing. But I don't think bait fishermen are going to dash up to Mammoth Creek or over to the Sevier. And they have miles of the Sevier to fish. I mean, it isn't like saying, well, this area is set aside for fly and lure only. That's just my opinion on it.
Thank you, Randy.
So,
sure, Randy, can you come back to the mic for a quick question?
So the limit, are you okay with if they change it back, leave it the artificial only, but allow them to take 4 fish, like on UM? Is that, that's SFW's recommendation. Is that okay?
I can't answer for the club on that because I haven't talked to them about that. Personally, I don't think that's an issue.
I don't think changing limit of 2 trout to 4 trout, you know. I'm not a big slot fan. I think you should go up and say, okay, if we're going to help this fishery, let's take 2 fish.
So you agree?
Yeah, you take 2 fish. You don't need 8. You don't need 10. You don't need a cooler full of them. If you're a catch and eat, which I am in some cases, you know, I take 2. And I'm going to probably take 2. They're not going to be in the slot. For example, I have real heartburn with panquich. I ice fish that a lot. They kill a lot of fish in the wintertime on that lake. Well, we'll just cut the line and turn them loose because that slot fish is $150. And I've seen guys, you know, I'm not going to get rid of my treble hook and throw that fish back. He'll swim off. But I've talked to the wardens a couple times, and they tell me, well, we have a lot of winter kill here. And they say it's the cabins. And I'm going, it might be. There's a lot of people on this lake throwing fish back.
Yeah, thank you.
If they just take 2, you know, it's a nothing money.
Thanks, Randy. So then we have Reed followed by Ryan Hatch.
Thank you. My name is Reed Nelson. I'm representing the James L. Hatch family here today. The Hatch family, oppose removing this regulation, strongly oppose removing this regulation. Mammoth Creek is a great fishery right now, and as you know, the private property has been posted a lot more, and unfortunately, they've needed to restrict it, mainly for the you know, the trespassing that's already occurred there, and we believe that removing this restriction of artificial fly and lure only would damage the fishery, and it's a great place right now to fish. It's a fantastic place to fish right now. A lot of it is already private property, and so I'm not you know, a lot of it legally probably wouldn't be able to be accessed through bait fishermen, but that doesn't stop them from doing it and then taking 8 fish or taking 10 fish out of the creek. So we strongly oppose it. We think it's a great fly fishing is a great way to preserve our natural trout fishing resources, and it's a great fishery we have. And I know they said that it was they're doing this mainly to simplify regulations. Well, I'm not sure that's a good enough reason to do this. To be honest with you, this is only a few places here in southern Utah to fly fish, and Mammoth Creek is one of the best, and I'd like to keep it that way. So.
Thank you, Brian.
Off to hunch down here a little bit. I'll take it out. My name is Ryan Hatch. Again, along with Reed, they're representing the James L. Hatch family. I represent most of the rest, and I do believe, looking at maps, ownership maps, last week after talking with Richard, and I really appreciate talking with Richard, and I think Craig as well, about this issue. I think the Hatch family owns all but maybe about 6 feet of the access of the Mammoth Creek that this regulation's going to apply to. And we have a county easement that runs right through the ranch that was given or allowed, you know, decades ago. So a lot of public feel like it's public property. They cross the bridge there. They stop and fish. The fences have been mashed down that are there to mainly there to keep livestock in and not fishermen out. But it's come to that over the years. It's the society we live in. We've been threatened with lawsuits from a man that trespassed a couple of years ago. Had his dog with him. Got a cow to chase the dog back toward the fisherman, and then the cow bunted the fisherman, and the guy came up and told my dad he's going to sue him. Well, you weren't supposed to be here anyway, but, you know, again, for liability reasons as well, we put this in place 14 or 15 years ago. The fisheries, I've been fishing it for 35 years as a fly fisherman since I was 10, and it's gotten better. I think Rusty can agree with me. And we do allow, you know, we've posted it, and it's mostly not for locals. It's mostly for, I mean, you have to post it for everybody, but there is some access allowed to people that will ask permission. We've put up signs in my lifetime 20, 30 times, 30 different years that we've posted all the way around the perimeter of those fences. They're gone within a week. You know, people that don't respect it aren't going to respect, and this is to go along with what Reed said. If they're willing to trespass, but now they can only get written up for trespassing because they're following the rules that are, they can use bait and they can keep eight fish or whatever, I'd still like to, if we're going to ever go after anybody, that they need to be following the existing regulations that have made it a great fishery over the last 15 years. I think the average size of fish is up. The populations are not huge, so if people start taking a limit of 8 or 10 fish, it's going to dwindle quick. The eagles get a lot of them in the fall, the big fish. I sit there and watch them. There's nothing you can do about that, but if fishermen start taking them too, it's going to be detrimental to that portion of the river. So appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for attending tonight. That's the end of the comment cards. Do we have any comments from the rack? Gene.
I'm a little short on understanding here. On the East Fork, of the Sevier, we're talking about 3 miles of fly fishing only, and I'm just trying to figure out which 3 miles that is.
It's on the division property in Black Canyon. Does that help?
That helps.
Okay.
Yeah. So down Kingston Canyon, there's Blue Ribbon Fishery that's open to bait. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sean?
Yeah, maybe some of the law enforcement section can answer this. I'm just curious about how many citations you write for people fishing with bait in these waters we're talking about.
I apologize. I don't have exact numbers, but it's not very many. Most people understand those regs, and it's fairly well posted up, and it is not currently.
So the current regs don't seem to be confusing the public. It sounds like they kind of know what's going on.
Yeah.
These have been in place for a long time.
Any questions this way? Okay. Comments?
Well, I failed to say one point. Maybe it's too
please late. Come up to the mic.
To address the question that just came up, and one more point that's really maybe not related, but it is. There aren't probably many citations written. All I can speak to is the Mammoth Creek, but in 15 years, and I'm not saying this to the detriment of the officers that work that area, I've never, ever, and I spend as much time as anybody I dare say other than my dad that lives there, never seen an officer up there patrolling, ever. And as Rusty can probably attest, and Reed and any of these other guys that go up there, if you'd sit on that bridge any given day, you could write citations. Any given day. And again, I know they have a huge area to cover, and it's one small stream, but I think you could work. We feel like we're up there patrolling the property because it's not being patrolled. And I'm told, well, you guys can control it and do whatever you want, but if those regulations change, then we're not only trying to keep people out, but we're keeping them following, you know, whether or not they're keeping fish and bait fishing and et cetera. The other thing I just wanted to say that's related to the Mammoth Creek is, and I'm a rancher, and irrigation water is crucial. This year, my dad said in his 68, I don't know how old he is now, Dave, 68, 69 years, he's seen two times that the Hatch Irrigation Company, this is not the Hatch family, this is the Hatch Town Irrigation Company, has because the river level is so low, was allowed to take 100% of the stream at the diversion dam there at Red Point. And all of the fish below there, when there's no flow, all of the fish are dead. And that's a travesty. I've seen pictures of hundreds of fish floating, and I don't know, Richard could maybe address how much flow is needed to sustain the populations there, but if a hose keeps running down it might help, but that's a travesty to me. I mean, it's thousands of fish, and again, I see both sides of it, but I wish there people could work together and remedy that. It doesn't happen often, but again, we've built this great fishery, and now it's... And that's below, I believe, this regulated area that we're talking about. I think the diversion dam is the big... But it's pretty sad. Yeah. So, thanks.
Thank you. Okay. I just want to make one comment. We've all received a few emails. I've maybe received a few more from the local fishing club. There was a number of people that said they were going to attend this evening but haven't. But the comments have all been very similar to what was been presented tonight by Ken and Randy and the Hatches. That they were specific to those three streams, the East Fork of the Spear and the Mammoth, that they'd like to see those regulations stay the same as far as artificial lures. There wasn't any comments regarding changing the limits or anything like that, but just to keep them as artificial lure only. As a fly fisherman, we do go to destinations. There's a group of us that'll travel for 7 or 8 hours, 9 hours to go to a destination to fish that's artificial fishing only. And we seek those areas for quality water and a quality experience. And we'd like to preserve those in our region if we can. Do we need to summarize, or I think we've pretty well, everything's been on the same theme?
Along the same lines as Dave, we've ran into people on the East Fork and the UM from all over the country. It's been in Southwest Fly Fishing Magazine several times, both those streams as well as the Mammoth. People come, they seek out those places. It's a part of our economic society, I think. People stay in the towns, the small towns. It's an economic benefit to some of the low of Bicknell and Antimony, and so I think it's worth saving. So thanks.
Okay, Brian.
So I'm going to be the other side of the table. I am a cheese chucking fool. I go with a bunch of 12 to 14 year old kids, and all we do is chuck cheese. None of them have a pole. They all fish on my license. None of them know how to tie a damn knot. It's ridiculous, and we have fun, and it's great. And that being said, I'm totally okay with keeping a few sections of stream that don't have 12-year-olds running around in a scout uniform that don't know how to tie a knot. I get that fly fishermen are a different breed. I get it. I get what you guys do. I think that there should be a spot for that, Rusty. I do. I think there should be a spot for that. I think what you guys done with the Kolob, where I can chuck cheese in the summertime, and then it goes away in the fall, it's perfect. It's perfect. But I do think that we should probably leave a couple of these streams alone, and that's just from a cheese chucker's perspective here. So I don't know.
Thank you. Sean?
Yeah, first off, I want to just congratulate the fishery section. I mean, the fishing in southern Utah is almost spectacular in places, and it's one of our best successes from the forest side as well, and so we really appreciate the efforts. You know, when you get a Forest Service representative, I'm trying to represent the forest. That's usually an opportunity, but opportunity isn't necessarily getting the most people out. Sometimes it's diversity of experience. And we support the division, but we also support keeping these few waters as artificial fly and lure only, just to provide that opportunity.
Okay. Just to summarize, Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, they only addressed UM Creek and the East Fork of the Sevier in their proposal. And then we've had other comments tonight that also included the Mammoth Creek. So I think we should be pretty clear on the comments, and I'm ready to entertain a motion.
I'd like to break procedure and maybe ask a question beforehand before
sure.
we move on, if that's okay.
Yeah, we'll let you.
So,
today only special.
Thanks. I know it's Black Friday. I know. Black Tuesday. So from an assistant chief standpoint, in our working with law enforcement, we have to be certain as to what our roles and responsibility are out in the landscape. With regard to Mammoth Creek and public-private access, who is responsible for the enforcement of this special regulation at this point in time if public access is not universally afforded?
You come and regulate the deer and the elk that come on my farm. So you regulate the deer and the elk and the deep fish that go down the creek. They belong to you.
Okay.
Yeah, Paul, do you want to come up and address that? But from my point of view, we're in charge of enforcing the regulation and potentially the trespassing. We could enforce both.
But if we remove the regulation, we would not be responsible. And
if we remove the regulation, we would not be responsible for bait fishermen, but we could we would certainly still be have a role in preventing trespassing.
Okay. Thank you.
Just one other comment there, Dad, just to make sure we all understand. In our guidebook, when it comes to these kind of properties, we don't put and really never have statewide put special regulations on streams or lakes or places that don't allow access. So this would be a first in this situation. So just wanted to make sure that was understood too.
Well, I guess it may be a first, but it's what's been in place for a long time. So that first has existed for quite a while. I guess that'd be my comment.
Okay, that's my thought. It's already that way. Correct.
It's that way now.
Okay.
Yeah, it was put back, and we discussed this. I discussed this with Mr. Hatch. There was an agreement made with previous aquatics manager and the Hatch family as far as an access agreement. So they were going to allow access if we'd implement these special regulations on the stream. We lost the special or the access in the last year or so, and so with that, that's why we proposed removing it, is because we haven't had those kind of situations in the past where we had special regulations where there was not access.
That does make sense.
Can I comment on that?
Yes.
I said...
You need it, Ryan.
Yeah.
Please come up to the mic.
Mike, you want me to pull this one?
Yeah, come over here.
It doesn't matter.
Baller. I think that was the agreement back 15 years ago, but the agreement was also if we're going to do this and we're going to put these regulations in, we're going to enforce it. And again, I've never seen it enforced. And again, I'm not trying to downplay the DWR officer's role. There's a huge area up there. I've seen two officers up there. Last 2 years ago, we had a trophy deer poached on the ranch, trespassed and killed, however you want to say it. That's the two officers I've seen there, nowhere near the stream. Rusty could speak to as often as he's up there, how often he's seen an officer. So the reason that it had to be enforced, the trespassing, was because there was nobody patrolling it. I mean, I spend my weekend up there racing down on a four-wheeler to see who's coming up. There are people there. There's no citations being written. So we finally had to take a hard stance and say, you're mashing the fences down, you're causing problems. You know, we're gonna keep it private, and that's how it's been.
Would you be open in the future to maybe renegotiate? And
I can't speak for the whole family, but you know,
access.
I think until 3 years ago, we used to allow. We put signs up at one point on our gate that comes up to the cabins that said, at the request of the Hatch family, please, and I'll paraphrase. I don't know exactly what it said. Please use artificial bait only. Park at the bridge. This is before Reed's side of the family and them were ever as vigilant as we are too. And people did it, ignored it. They'd drive right up to the cabins, right where Rusty parks, I know on Wilson Creek. It was just completely ignored. And I'd love to hear an instance of anybody being cited
prosecuted for breaking the laws that have been in effect, because I haven't seen it.
I've issued those citations. We can't be everywhere, but I personally have written people standing on the bridge fishing and have tried to help that. I know Micah Evans has been pretty involved in that as well over there. When we get calls to areas, we respond to those. We can't always be there immediately, but it is something that we try and enforce. And as to whether or not we can do a good enough job to take care of this issue, I can't say that for sure, but we definitely have issued citations and have patrolled that on a fairly regular basis.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah.
Can I ask a real quick question? What's the punishment for fishing with bait in that area?
So the bail schedule and what actually is paid is fairly different. It's about $150 citation according to the bail schedule, but some of our justice courts don't view it as that significant of an issue and don't assess
what
that.
What about
much.
Trespassing?
So trespassing, if we go with a wildlife trespass, it actually has some pretty significant teeth, and we can suspend someone's fishing privileges if they were trespassing and fishing, and that usually is the bigger issue. It's about $150 citation usually, but the ability that we have to suspend their fishing privileges is a bigger.
And county deputies can enforce that as well?
They can, yes.
How many county deputies are there in Iron County, you know?
In Iron, there's quite a few. I think mainly in Mammoth, we're talking Garfield County.
It would
and
be
there's,
Garfield,
yeah,
true.
There's not very many. I can think of six or seven.
How many COs do you have working that area?
Right now, one. And he's actually covering a couple of other counties as well. We're a little shorthanded.
Thanks. Okay. I think we're ready for a motion. Rusty?
I'll try it. Okay. I'd like to make a motion to accept the recommendations of the divisions with the exceptions of the changes on the Mammoth Creek to leave that the same as per the family's request.
Can you slow down? Let's get that one in, then we'll move on.
Exception of Mammoth Creek.
Leave it the same. You got that?
Leave it the same.
Okay.
The East Fork of the Sevier River, it's a WMA area, to leave it the same as far as the artificial lure flies regulations, but allow the take of four fish.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, I got to the Sevier River fish monster.
Kevin's still typing to you. Let's let him catch up.
And the very beautiful UM Creek, leave it the same as far as the artificial lures and flies, but allow the take of four fish.
So you want Sevier River to be left the same?
The East Fork of the Sevier to remain artificial fly and lure, that section that currently is.
Mindy, there's two regulation changes there. There's the artificial fly and lure only. That's what they're wanting to stay the same. But we're also proposing that the limit go from two fish to four fish. The motion would allow for that.
Is that right, Rusty?
Yes.
Yes. So to accept the increase in limit, but not accept the change from artificial fly and lure only to allowing bait fishing.
Okay.
So it would echo SFW's proposal.
You got that?
No.
With the Mammoth Creek added to it.
So
okay. Do we have a second?
So without Rusty, with the exception of Mammoth Creek, they were the same.
So you're not leaving it the same. You're leaving it the same in terms of the artificial fly and lure only, but allowing for the increased limit.
Just on UM Creek.
On both UM and East Fork of Sevier.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
It's easier to just pause. No. Okay, so would you restate the motion as you guys have it, please? Or do you want me to read mine?
Read yours.
Okay, so the motion is to accept the recommendations with the exception of the changes to Mammoth Creek, also the changes to the East Fork of the Sevier and UM Creek to allow the take of four fish, but to keep the artificial fly and lure only regulations in place.
Do we have a second? Okay, we have a second by Gene. Any discussion? All those in favor? Okay, thank you. That was easy. Let's move on then to our last item, which is item number 7, and that's the CRO Deer Unit Management Plan, Central Region.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Riley Peck. I'm the Central Region Wildlife Manager. It's good to be down here. These are the Central Region Mule Deer Management Plans, and promise that I will keep them brief. I made a promise to Sean Kelly at the beginning of this night that I'll hurry so he can get home and watch Dancing with the Stars, and I'll do my best to keep that promise. The mule deer management plans are revisited every 5 years. They're in conjunction with the range trend studies. And our region recently completed our range trend studies in 2017. And so in conjunction with that, we are bringing out our updated mule deer management plans. The management plans are kept within the sideboards of the statewide plan, and that is consistent with the plans that we are written. There is nothing inside of them that go against the statewide management plan that is in existence. This map is an overview of our central units, specifically 16, 17, 18, and 19. Within those units, one of the major topics of conversation is our population objectives listed there. We are not recommending a change in any of the population objectives within the management plan. Also, one of the main talking points is always our buck to doe ratios. We are not recommending a change on those either. You'll notice on this slide I did split out the Vernon from the West Desert. We do have a limited entry unit, subunit within a unit, and to help us understand the buck to doe ratio, we split that out. Within the central region, we're kind of unique in the state, maybe along with the northern region, in that we have a lot of that urban wildlife interface, a lot of urban deer plans, and so we do address for those within the plan. We also have an equal portion of depredation and nuisance, and that is addressed in the plans as well. Recently, we've had a lot of collar studies going on that help us get to cause-specific mortality, including disease, roadkill, and predation, and we get pretty specific in the plan on how we will address those as well. Habitat is a really big portion of the plan, with emphasis on the range trend studies. We continue to do improvements through WRI and our spring range assessments through range rides. One of the things we are adding to the plan this year, this is in the Central Mountains Manti unit, we're recommending the statewide deer management plan include the south end of the Nebo for a deer transplant site. Part of the reason that we are recommending this is we have so many urban deer plans in our region that we're constantly transplanting live deer as part of city's plans, and we are looking for a site in our region to move those, and this is one that has fairly low deer populations and a lot of landowners around them requesting that. Just in summary, we are not asking for a change in population objectives, buck to doe ratios. We will continue our habitat improvements and an emphasis on habitat, continue disease monitoring, depredation nuisance, and our urban wildlife interface, continue to work with that. We are asking for a new translocation site be added to the statewide plan on the Central Mountains on the southwest Nebo. And as I promised to keep it brief, that is all that I have for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the RAC?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Question. It's already on. Question, Riley. Could you go back to that slide with the objectives? This has been a concern of mine with deer.
Which one?
And just
the
go, one more.
Or no, population?
Yeah, population. So this has been a concern, and we're seeing it on this, that the population estimate is over the objective in 18. My understanding is that that means that we should reduce population.
So the population objective is over?
Population estimates over the objective.
Right.
And doesn't that mean that we should be reducing population?
So, yes, it does. And we tried to address for that when we put out our deer recommendations, right, with our antlerless hunts. We're working to do that on site-specific areas where we are going through our range trend or our spring range assessments, and we are seeing the most need. And this year we did get a couple sites approved for additional doe harvest. We have not been very successful at getting those recommendations through the rack and board process in the past, but we are working towards that and have more antlerless recommended on that unit than we've had in a few years.
So here's my real question, and it's probably very unit specific. I get nervous as I see that, because overall, when we lowered the deer objectives in the state, it was so that we could meet some goals and become closer to our objectives. It was not based on habitat or biological reasons. And what I get nervous about is we start seeing our deer increase and we get some units that are over objective, that we wouldn't react to it just being over objective, that we'd actually go back and look at the carrying capacity. Are we doing that in 18?
So, yeah. Short answer, yes. Long answer is we have places when we're taking some, you know, we have some of these color studies when we're looking at the overall health of the herd, where we're seeing excellent body condition, we're seeing great survival, and we're seeing a decrease in the population and all these different factors. And so we are looking at it pretty strategically where we are recommending our doe harvest. It is not unit wide. It is very surgical in our locations.
Perfect. And that's what I would hope, is that it'd be surgical. So then unit wide, should we not be looking at increasing that objective?
I think that's a case-by-case basis. I think some units, maybe you would have the ability to do that. On this specific unit on 18, so much of it is... So much of it is an area that I don't know that is necessarily the case for this specific unit.
Okay, so in your opinion, Unit 18, that is a good objective based on habitat, and we are doing some targeted removal.
So, right, and as when we look at our estimate, too, I mean, we have the ochre Stansberries. We have areas around Tooele that we are counting specifically where we have really high numbers. We have really poor body condition. Tooele is one of the cities that is looking to do an urban deer pop removal plan. It is the right objective, even though we're a little bit high on it.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Questions? Do I have any questions from the public? We do have one comment card, is that correct?
Yes.
Ken?
Ken Strong, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We approve the division's proposal as presented. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, support. any comments from the rack? I'm ready to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept as presented.
Do I have a second? We have a second from Brian. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Unanimous.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries. We have a motion to adjourn. Do we have a second?
Second.
I don't have my sheet. Does anybody have their sheet? It's the next meeting.
I can find it for you.
Okay. We call this meeting adjourned, and we'll get the answer to that question.
I can get it too.
I've got it right here. No, I'm looking up the next meeting.
Thanks, Kate.
Our next meeting is November 13th at Cedar City Middle School. It'll start at 5 o'clock instead of 7.
We're back to that already.
November 13th, Cedar Middle, 5 o'clock.